I would like to spend today's class on the subject of conscience, and all of you will have received a 2-page outline. I'll try to follow the outline because, in my judgment, the single most critical and most important aspect of morality in our day is to understand what is the conscience. Everybody says they're following their conscience. Yet we have people committing murder, adultery, fornication, and are following their conscience. First, by way of introduction, why is it important to understand what we mean as Catholics by conscience, and how are we to train ourselves to have a correct and good conscience? Because everything of the moral order finally depends on understanding and living up to our having a good conscience. Before we begin any further, let me just note there was one name you should all remember in connection with either morality or, for our purpose, conscience. That is the German philosopher Immanuel Kant, Immanuel, and his last name Kant, Immanuel Kant. Immanuel Kant founded what has since become known as Kantian philosophy. Most of the Western world is shaped by Kantian philosophy, taught in all universities, libraries, have not only his books, but hundreds of volumes of commentary on Immanuel Kant. For Immanuel Kant, conscience is each person's free will. Conscience is each person's free will. And what each person, in his own mind, has discovered and decided is right, therefore good. That's what that person should do. And we have a free will to follow our conscience. Meaning what? Meaning when our own minds, for each one of us, has decided we ought to choose. Given that understanding of conscience, which I would say underlies the philosophy of most of the nations of the Western world, and in teaching moral theology, we'd spend weeks analyzing and, of course, refuting Kantian moral philosophy. But I thought we should say something to realize there is a fundamental, what I would call, foundational error in the moral order in the Western world. And it is basically Kantian subjectivism. Not only does each person have his or her own free will, which is obvious, but the norms of our conduct are to be discovered by each person for himself. We go on. It is not only that we should know what is conscience, we also need to develop, and there are three adjectives that are crucial, a true, clear, and convinced conscience. Before we go any further, don't forget, conscience is in the mind. Conscience is not in the will. Conscience is in the intellect. Conscience is in our native mind, enlightened by divine faith. We're still asking ourselves why it is important to understand what is a true and correct conscience. Because everybody finally appeals to their conscience. Fine. But, as we'll see as we go on, though each one of us has his or her own conscience, because each of us has our own mind, but our mind must be enlightened. Enlightened by reality outside the mind and by divine revelation that comes from God. With that introduction, I'd like to cover the following areas. What do we mean by conscience? Comparing conscience with other things that are sometimes called conscience, but really are not. What the kinds of conscience a person can have. What duties do we have regarding our conscience? Then what is a lax? Perplexed, scrupulous, doubting, and of course, most important, what is a certain conscience? And even as I use the words, as I've said so many times, the English language is not Catholic. Underline, encircle, emblazon the word certain has many different meanings. You want to know, therefore, what we are talking about, what kind of conscience people can have, and above all, before this hour and a half is over, that we also know something on how to develop our consciences. First, then, definition. Conscience is a judgment of the practical intellect, deciding from general principles the goodness or evil of some act, which either is to be done here and now or has already been done in the past. Let's briefly analyze the definition. Our conscience is in the mind, in the intellect. It is not, God forbid, what millions believe following Immanuel Kant. Conscience is not what each person freely chooses or decides should be his or her own normal morality. Conscience is the judgment of the practical intellect. We distinguish in our minds between the practical and the speculative intellect. What's the difference? The speculative intellect is our minds enlightening on us on what things are, what something is. This is a watch. This is paper. We now have a class in moral theology. We are now speaking on the subject of conscience. The what the mind knows belongs to what we call the speculative intellect. However, we have a mind not only to know what things are, we also have a mind that enlightens us how we are to do what God wants us to do. And that is the practical intellect. And we then say that each human mind both thinks in terms of basic principles, answer the question of what? Child asking his mother, Mother, what is this? That's a speculative intellect. But then that same intellect has the practical side of how we are to use the intellect. That is called the practical intellect. And just speaking in general, many exceptions. In general, over the years, I've been telling my students, men have generally a stronger speculative intellect. Men are the philosophers, not always correct philosophers, but nevertheless, philosophers. Women, on the other hand, generally have a better practical intellect. Husbands have some bright idea what they're going to do. She listens to him and smiles, of course, and says, honey, but where are we going to get the money? Never occurred to him. Now, all of us have both a speculative and a practical intellect. Properly speaking, conscience belongs to the practical intellect, in which, then, this part of our mind, the practical side of our thinking, decides. Remember, the words decide, decision, belong to the mind. They do not belong to the will. We choose with the will. We make resolutions with the will. But we decide with the mind. How does the conscience reach its decisions? From general principles. For example, a general principle in teaching is to start class on time. Father Donnie reminded me and gave me a chart to prove it. That I'm to be in class at 12:55 and go until 2:25. Well, I finished the sandwich that I was eating and had one of those small paper cups of Welch's grape juice. I gulped it down and got here just in time. The general principle is be on time. People are expecting. So then, my conscience told me, and there was more on the table. Thanks for the food that I didn't eat. Or this morning, I knew if I'm going to come to class, I better come prepared. So I got up much earlier than I normally would and spent 3 hours preparing your notes. My conscience told me from the general principle that if you're teaching, you should, well, provide what the people expect. My conscience then decided, since I hadn't had the class to prepare before this morning, better get up earlier and prepare a class. What does the conscience decide? It decides either the goodness or the evil of some act or action. Our imagination is an ocean of possibilities. But not everything that we can do is good. So our intellect, on the basis of the principles or norms that we've got, must decide, and we're doing this constantly, must decide whether what I'm either going to do should be done because it's good or should not be done because it's bad, or looking back in memory what I did during the day when I examine my conscience each evening. I go down the series of things I did, which ones were good, and I can tell you, not everything that I do in a given day is always good. What is the essence of a good action? A good action is that which God wants me to perform. It's that simple, but my friends, it's also that hard. Because there are two wheels that are constantly in conflict. Constantly, constantly, They are the will of God and our own wills. So then, our conscience is to decide whether a given action that I have the option of performing is according to God's will or not. And that is why this is our second class for this semester. If there is one thing we better be clear about, we are going to be as morally good in our lives as our wills are truly, and I mean truly free, from what we call inordinate attachments. In other words, we see we have a free will. Oh, we do? We are all, beginning with the speaker, in greater or less measure, enslaved by our likes and dislikes. All of us. Find out, therefore, what are the tendencies that I spontaneously have going in what direction. For example, if there's anybody here in class that just cannot wait at night to get up in the morning, anxious, and finds getting up the most pleasant task they perform during the day. Anybody here? I can't put my hand up. Am I making sense? We all have built-in tendencies. Tendencies towards what we like, and tendencies away from what we don't like. All of us. Is everything we like always pleasing to God? Is everything we dread or dislike always displeasing to God? If the answer to that question was yes, we could all go home. Our conscience, therefore, must decide either on some future action that we are still to perform, or memory-wise, passing judgment on an action we have performed, and now decide post factum whether what I had done was good or bad. And let me tell you, the best training for the conscience on what we should do in the future is to regularly make an inventory of our conscience for the past. Those who don't examine their past actions, they may notoriously failing in their conscience for the future. Just because I've done something doesn't mean that it was always good. Let me tell you, 45 years in the priesthood has taught me many things, most of which I've never published. One thing I've learned, the hardest thing for most people to admit is that they've done something wrong. I mean it. They give speeches, write books, do anything but admit they're wrong. And if they're in politics, they'll even make laws to justify what they're doing, which down deep they know is wrong. So much for the definition, now the comparison. I make four comparisons between conscience and moral habit, moral science, prudence, and what we call the natural law. Let me tell you, over the years of teaching, I have found that the essence of a clear mind is to be able to distinguish one idea from another. We assume this in, say, the physical material order. This happens to be a black watch band. This is white paper. The contrast between, say, one color and another, you know, makes it clear that, you know, one is not the other. If I wrote with white chalk on this white paper, wouldn't be clear. Why not? It wouldn't be distinct. Remember that for the rest of your days. The essence of being clear is to be distinct. That you can distinguish one thing from another. That's why we have so many words in, say, our vocabulary. To distinguish one idea from another, we have a distinct or different label. So, to see more clearly, that is distinctly, how conscience is not precisely moral habit. Moral habit is the disposition that I have towards acting in a certain way. Conscience is the way that I act, depending on the kind of a habit that I've got. Now, the moral habit will, of course, affect my conscience. If I am morally a good person, then I can expect my conscience to direct me, well, towards good actions. If I am not a morally good person, in other words, I have moral bad habits, otherwise known as vices. A person who is living a sinful life, oh, he's got a conscience all right, but his conscience will spontaneously decide on what side. On the side of his character, on the side of his habit. And he won't even be able to see, blind. Won't even recognize a virtue when he sees it, or appreciate a virtuous person. Each one of these, by the way, deserves at least 1 hour of lecture, which we don't have the luxury for. So moral habit is rather the disposition of the mind in a given direction, depending on the person's character. The conscience is each single action or act, which then my intellect decides I should or should not do, but I will decide in the direction of my moral disposition. Secondly, moral science. Moral science deduces objective principles. Conscience is the subjective application of these principles. In other words, every human being as long as a person is rational, sane, sober, and awake, operates from principle. That, by the way, is spelled P-L-E. The adjective is spelled P-A-L. Remember, A, P-A-L, adjective. So whenever we act morally, and remember we've already said, we act morally whenever we use our free wills. Do we always act morally good? No. Do we perform morally bad actions? We sure do. The essence of morality is freedom. We've got to do some violence to our vocabulary because that's not the way that Webster's on a bridge thinks. So, there is a science which has these principles. However, the conscience then, subjectively in each case, applies these principles to a given action. Now, the reason we are going through this course is to provide some principles to develop your minds in the science of morality. I doubt if you'll hear that again, the science of morality. Morality is a science, and it's an exact science. It has principles. And you know more can break or go against the principles of morality without paying for it than you can go against the principle of gravity without paying for it. Morality is a science. And over the years, in fact, one reason you got these charts with one of this, two of that, and A of that, and B of something else. Because my whole background to superiors, already after I was ordained, took me out of my graduate studies in the engineering school at the university where I'm now living in Detroit, and told me, and I was, of course, obedient, happy, to leave one science, the science of organic chemistry, and transfer to another science, the science of theology. That's a science too. That's why so many books, I believe most of the books published, at least in our English language, in theology, are not theology. They're theological fiction, I told you. And they're bestsellers. People with fertile imaginations. That's not morality. Morality has principles. Definite. Third comparison, prudence. Prudence is a virtue. Conscience is the act of prudence. Or better, conscience should always act with prudence. As I'm sure you know, we'll touch on this and just touch on it. I don't think we have even 10 classes this semester. We're going to try to, is it?
Eight
classes. We're trying to cover what normally in the standard course in theology is 4 years. 8 semesters. 3 classes a week. 15 weeks each semester. There are four what they call moral virtues. The first of those moral virtues is in the intellect, is the virtue of prudence. What is prudence? Prudence is that virtue of the mind which enables us to choose the right means to a predetermined right end. Prudence is the virtue that enables our mind to choose the right means to attain a predetermined right or correct end. I'm hungry. I shouldn't even have brought it up. Prudence tells me, if I'm to satisfy my hunger, I must eat. But notice, using the right means to achieve the right end. Is there anything wrong with, say, having a satisfied appetite? No. Is it a sin to enjoy our food? But having said that, is it possible for a person to be imprudent, either in not eating or in eating? And the same with sleep. I think I told you about the letter that I still have in my files from my provincial. Remember? John, I hear you're getting 4 hours of sleep. If it's true, get six. I wrote back. His name was John, too. I said, "Dear John, do you mean 6 hours every night or 6 hours on an average?" He wrote back, "Dear John, don't be funny. 6 hours every night." So it's the right means to achieve a predetermined, correct, a right end. However, conscience should always act prudently. Conscience, then, should be a prudent conscience. And finally, the natural law, enlightened by faith. We all have a natural built-in capacity to recognize what is right and what is wrong. Natural capacity. Now, that natural capacity is very limited and can be misled. But we do have that natural tendency. That's what mothers in training their children. They assume that their children have a natural ability to learn what is right and wrong. Otherwise, if they didn't have the capacity for learning, all the scolding, all the reprimanding, or even all the whipping would not help. There must be a capacity already built in our nature for recognizing what is right and wrong. However, keep this in mind. We who have the faith are not only possessed of a natural capacity for recognizing what is right or what is wrong. Being baptized, the moment we were baptized, hear it, our faith provided us not only with light to know what God has revealed that we are to believe, but from baptism already, our minds are enlightened to indeed believe what God has revealed, but also to know what God wants. There's a capacity for knowing God's will in the moral order that a baptized person has that nobody else on earth possesses. The conscience of a Christian is different, and that attitude to different is a mild word. In other words, our mind possessed of what we call the capacity to make judgments in the moral order, sometimes called the natural law, had been enlightened by faith and provides therefore our mind with the norms or principles that we are to choose. But I repeat, not only what is naturally good, but what is supernaturally good. For example, is it possible for a person to choose what is painful, even though by all the laws of natural prudence it would be wrong to do so? Yes. I'll be as specific as I can. I'd much rather sit than stand. But 40 years of teaching have taught me you teach more effectively. We don't just use words. You are in contact with your students eye to eye, including the eyes that are beginning to droop and get sleepy. It's remarkable how drooping eyes suddenly wake up when I look at them. We go on. The kinds of conscience. Remember, our whole reflection during this class will be on conscience. Let me tell you. And though we spend 20 hours, it would not be 1 minute too long. There's so much to learn. What are the kinds of conscience that a person can have? First, in regard to the act, the language is strange, but if you're going to understand reality, you've got to pick up some strange words. There's what we call antecedent and subsequent conscience. In other words, my conscience is antecedent when I use it before I perform an action. And there are some people, not only do they not know the word antecedent conscience, they very seldom use their antecedent conscience. Especially when they use the one ability of the body that can do so much good, but also so much harm. Our tongue, our lips. Oh, what wisdom to have developed an antecedent conscience. Antecedent to what? Antecedent to everything that I say. And subsequent. This is the way we were trained from the novitiate on. Every day, indeed twice a day by rule, I am to examine or re-examine my conscience in terms of what I have done, my subsequent conscience, whether what I did was morally good or not. Can we perform actions that post factum we realize were not good? Yes. And if there's one thing I strongly recommend to all of you, all of you, all of you, and I ask our Lord to remain faithful for the rest of your lives, never, never go to bed without examining your conscience. And of course, a subsequent conscience. So that I live over what I have done. And of course, we are not naturally prone to do it. We're not naturally inclined to antecedently ask whether an action would be good or not. Just jump in and do it. As your mothers know with your children. Jump in. So also with the subsequent. We don't naturally want to look over our past actions because we know what? We know that not everything we did, it doesn't have to be 2 weeks. One day is enough. St. Ignatius cultivated the habit of examining his conscience on schedule 7 times a day. He was merciful to his followers. My rule requires only 2x a day. Thanks, St. Ignatius. Again, kind of conscience. In regard to conformity with the eternal law. I can spell eternal, by the way. Though I am so used to Latin. I prefer Latin, by the way. In Latin, it is aeterna lex. So I just thought I'd save myself time. There are, in general, a correct conscience, if it is deduced correctly from true principles. Another word is true conscience. I put the word correct first because that is, I think, clear, because the word true can have many meanings in people's minds. In other words, when my conscience, first of all, has good moral principles, and secondly, that the same mind of mine has deduced correctly from sound principles a conclusion on which then I act. That's the purpose of the conscience. The conscience is to provide us with conclusions. Every decision of a conscience is a conclusion. What does God say about whatever it is? And then, knowing the principle, how, on the practical side, is that principle to be applied here and now? If both my principle was true and my logic was sound, then the conclusion that my conscience reaches is a correct conclusion, and then I have what we call either a true or correct conscience. And the opposite, of course, is erroneous conscience. And all erroneous consciences, all of them, either start with the wrong principles, or even starting with the right principles, do not logically, do not think straight in deducing from a correct principle what I should do here and now. For example, I get more mail than I can answer. Years ago, and this was a hard deduction to make, I had to decide there's no way that I could do what I think God tells me are priorities in my life if I try to answer all my mail. Would it be a sin for me if I did not have other priorities in my life not to answer my mail? Yes. Now, we're going to spend the rest of the term in explaining how the conscience is to have both sound principles and draw the right conclusions. But an erroneous conscience, to repeat, either has the wrong principles or, operating from sound principles, does not think straight and therefore can reach an erroneous conclusion that will make a wrong judgment. Otherwise, it is erroneous. And another word that the church uses is a false conscience. Now, those two are synonymous. Correct and true erroneous and false. If I taught from now until October the 11th, 1993, about the importance of developing a true conscience, I wouldn't be talking too long, because there are so many powers, agencies, forces all around us that are constantly trying to shape our minds. We better close our eyes or close our ears. I cannot tell you what a blessing it is to be hard of hearing. And on a plane, it's just a sheer grace. In other words, we have a duty to develop a true or correct conscience, because, and I mark my words, the world is hell-bent on shaping our consciences contrary to the will of God.